Hello again, ladies and gentlemen. This is Kevin. I'm here with my brother, Brandon. And welcome to another episode of Sons of the Double Cheeseburger. How are you doing today, Brandon?
I'm doing pretty good today. Actually, I was really, really proud of myself. The last 2 days, I have learned how to replace the brakes, like handbrakes, on a bicycle.
Oh.
So I rebuilt the handbrakes on one of our bicycles so that it was street usable, and tested it out. Successfully did not crash, and so, yeah.
That's good.
I'm feeling pretty skilled today, actually.
No, that's good. So it means you also, not only have you been riding a bike, you can now do maintenance on the bike.
Yeah.
So how difficult was the job? Did you need any special tools to do this?
Not really special tools. Needed Allen wrenches and just a regular wrench, and needed to buy some supplies at the local bike shop. But that was it. So, because I needed to actually replace some components.
Yeah, we've got a bike that we picked up. The brakes are all locked up and weird. I was just trying to think if it seemed that was something that I could learn how to do myself.
I watched a YouTube video that was 4.5 minutes long that walked me through everything I needed to do. And then I did it.
Was yours just needing the pads replaced, or was there more going on?
No, I replaced the cable, actually. So my cable had broken or was defective in some way. So what I had to do was remove the cable, and then I bought a new cable and a new protective wrap for that cable.
A sheath?
Yeah, I suppose you might call it a sheath. And then a little piece that I have... Oh, the noodle. There's a little piece on there that they call the noodle. I had to get a new noodle and did that. And so then, yeah, took it all apart, put together the new parts, tightened up, tested for, you know, getting it to the right setting that I wanted it at, and then took it out and rode it. Rode it to the store to pick up some prescriptions. So,
do you ride a fixie? What kind of bike do you ride?
This particular bike is a fixie, the old single gear. This is actually a three wheel rider. So it's an adult tricycle.
What? Are you serious?
Yes.
Does it have like a basket on the back?
Yeah, it does.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
This was actually a bike that we got for Joshua quite a few years ago, because he really was having trouble with the balance, but he wanted to ride. And so we got this, and one of the last things we got in Illinois before we... In fact, we bought it in Illinois and assembled it in California.
I remember loading that into one of the containers, the bicycle box,
So... So now Zachary is going to ride it. Josh is not. Josh might ride it again, but Zachary is in particular interested in riding. I have a bicycle with multiple speeds, just a Schwinn. You know, it's a real standard, basic sort of street cruiser kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so I want Zachary to ride the slower bike, So it's important to me that...
Oh, I know your angle there.
The three-wheeler there is not quite as nimble, and it's only at one speed, so it's not quite as fast. And with Zachary, it really is helpful if you can find a couple of ways to sort of slow him down, to even up the game.
Have you thought of just taking off all the wheels?
Thought about that. Then it's not a bicycle or a tricycle.
Or just one wheel.
Then it's a unicycle.
No, but not a... Okay. Have you thought of getting a tandem bicycle?
I have.
He can do most of the work and taking you, just powering you along.
I have thought about that. I don't want to do that. I like the idea of him riding his own bicycle, but I just need to make sure he's going to be safe about it. The local shop by us has tandem bikes. They have more of these adult tricycles with the basket in the back. Because a lot of people around here ride their bikes as transportation. And
which is great, I think.
Yeah, ride to the store, do things like that. So they also sell a lot of bikes that have that are designed in such a way. Maybe I'll give you a picture. So if you want, you can put it on the page. But like
you can do that too. You're welcome.
Oh,
to
I could do that. You're right. I could put this up on the page. So it's a it's a cool design that is built so that the back instead of having the back is kind of elongated a little bit, and instead of having a bumper, it's got like a flat mounted area where it's easy to put, you know, packages or things like that, or to put some other larger kind of like bags or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing a lot of people out here, well, not a lot of people, but a fair number of people out here do, that I think is really cool, is there is an attachment that you can get put onto your bike that you can carry your surfboard.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine that.
So, yeah. So you just, it's like a sidecar. Your surfboard is the sidecar there. And so, yeah, there are a lot of surfers that just ride around with their surfboards like that.
Right, right. We wouldn't see that as much around here, but yeah.
Not as much in a landlocked part of it, a Midwestern state. It's less
there is common. Some Great Lakes surfing.
Oh, yeah. But not in your town.
No. Or, I mean, we're on the river, you know.
It's true.
That leads to the lake.
I suppose people could do a lot of paddle boarding on the river if they wanted to.
They could. We have a lot of kayaking that goes on.
There you go.
A lot of our rivers still have dams as they go through towns.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of our rivers. The river that goes through a lot of towns, there's dams at the towns.
Yeah.
That whole sentence needs to be edited. That was not my best sentence. So as the river goes through towns, historically dams were put in for probably industrial purposes or whatnot. And those dams are still there. They are doing a lot of work to take them out. The goal is to remove all the dams along the Fox River. And
oh, that's interesting.
But they haven't gotten to that point. But in places where there are still dams, in many places they have then put a little side area for kayakers to go around the dam.
Yeah.
So
that's cool.
Nice. Yeah.
I didn't know they were going to remove all the dams.
Yeah, ecologically, they are a detriment to the aquatic life.
Sure.
And they don't serve a purpose anymore. They're not running any mills.
No. They haven't been able to convert them to, like, hydroelectric or anything.
They're not big enough for that, right?
Yeah.
Right. So. Yeah, I was going to... There's been a number of meetings about it to kind of let people know what's going on. So it's been, I mean, it's something I approve of. And they're doing it in other areas around Chicago as well. So,
nice.
It's a positive.
Well, that's excellent. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, how have you been?
I've been doing pretty good. Kids just finished up school. It was very emotional because it was their last year in that class. They're in a Montessori school. They've been in the same classroom with the same teachers for 6 years.
Okay.
So it's a 6-year cycle.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they had to finish that up. And it's not that it isn't emotional when you've been in the same class for a year and you're moving on to a different, you know, let's say you're going on to middle school or something. But having spent 6 years with the same teacher and, you know, progressively 5, 4, 3, 2, you know, with a lot of the same students, it really becomes a community that, in some ways is difficult to leave.
Sure. There's
something being left behind, friends and whatnot. So
no, I can believe that. I mean, even but when was, like when we were in school and you weren't in the same class every year, if you might be in a class with someone for a couple of years, then when suddenly they were in a different classroom, that was always a weird experience. So
yeah.
I could imagine it's more intense than that, and then the teacher besides. So wow.
Yeah, we were very emotional. That whole morning, it was a couple of days ago, I had a dream about it. I woke up and I was just feeling all emotional about it. And then it happened a couple more times until the little online ceremony. And then they showed a play that normally they would do a class play.
Yeah.
They couldn't do that this year, obviously. But what the 6 years did is they got together, they had a bunch of Zoom meetings, and they wrote a play, kind of a parody of The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, cool.
Which was why I had watched The Wizard of Oz for the first time a number of weeks ago. And so they did that, and we watched that, and I thought it was really cool. It was supposed to be just like a 6 year thing, so that the 6 years wouldn't miss out on having that opportunity.
Right.
To kind of be the lead dogs in the play.
Mm-hmm.
But they did a really nice job. They kind of, without telling the younger students, they had a meeting, and when each of the students logged in, they recorded that portion, and then they kind of did prompts like, you know, they were saying something about talking about everybody in the class, about how they'll see everybody again soon. And so they included all of the younger students, and I thought that was really nice, you know, in their moment of trying to accomplish, you know, do something for themselves, to kind of cross a bridge or you know, engage in something that's kind of a milestone for them, that they included other people as well.
That is cool. That is cool.
But I've also been doing a lot of, I've been doing some genealogy work.
Nice.
For our family.
Mm.
Which sometimes you say, do you want to see how the sausage is made? And the answer is no, right?
Right, right.
But some of it I've been doing some for Eileen's side of the family as well.
Okay. Big insights have you had, or big interesting things maybe that you found?
Okay, so dig this. So our father is William Dale, right?
Yeah.
William Dale Woosley, and he goes by his middle name.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the story we've always heard about that?
That going back like an extremely long time, maybe hundreds of years, or since the family came to America, that the oldest son has always been named William something. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right, and so our family,
and as the oldest son, who is not named William, that was fresh in my mind.
Right, but you then picked that back up.
Yeah.
Your oldest son, right?
Yes.
Who we've referred to as Joshua.
Yes, we do.
But he is actually William Joshua. Right.
That is correct.
Yes. So that does not go back as far as we've always been led to believe.
Mm.
And since our father was the firstborn.
Yeah.
He got the name, which means that his father was the firstborn.
Yeah.
Which would mean so our direct path should always represent that, right? It's not like it would break away at some point that we would be seeing.
Well, unless it would be. Could it be that in each generation, like within the whole family line, like within the whole family tree, the oldest, like, so like, let's say, for example, because I guess there's one way, here would be another way to think about it. So I'm the oldest in our generation, right?
Right.
So imagine that I had actually been named William, but then let's suppose that you guys had had kids before we did. Would your oldest have been named William? You see what I mean?
Right. But then that's more convoluted, and I don't know that our family could manage that sort of...
But convoluted is what our family does.
Oh, that's true. Oh, you make a good point. Oh!
So, I mean, I'm not arguing that that is what happened.
No, well, So, this is what I found.
Yes.
In any event. Our father, William Dale. His father, William Arthur.
Yes.
Went by Bill.
Mm-hmm.
His father, William Benjamin, went by something. I don't know what.
He went by Jammin. It was, that was a very popular thing in the early part of the 20th century. There's Jammin Woosley. Yeah, that's what he went by. I'm pretty sure.
So his father, William Benjamin's father, yeah. William Benjamin, 1877 to 1958.
Okay.
His father was Benjamin Franklin Woosley.
Wow. So it really only goes... It doesn't even extend into the 1800s.
Right.
It's so...
1840 was... Yeah, so that he was born in 1840. In Nebraska. Did you know that we had somebody in our family born in Nebraska?
I believe that. That's a lot of that whole middle of the country, you know.
Our great-grandfather was born in Longmont, Colorado.
Okay.
Which is also actually where our grandfather was born.
Okay.
Our paternal grandfather.
And then our father was born where?
Our father was born in Chicago.
Oh, that's right. Right across the street from where we went to college, right.
Yes. And then he lived also right across from where we went to college, just a couple streets over, right?
Yes.
Because I could remember I was in the dean's office once getting in trouble, and I could look out the window. The dean was sitting there, and I was looking out the window behind him, and I saw the house then where our father lived the first few years of his life.
Yes. And I can remember that before they tore down the hospital where he was born, presumably because it was ruined at that point. I'm just kidding. But no, before they tore it down, it was closed, and it sat there vacant right across the street from our dormitory. And on multiple occasions, I went up with some classmates, and we pitched golf balls across LaSalle Street into the lot where the hospital was.
Was that from North Hall?
Yeah. No, from our dorm.
From Dryer?
Yeah. Mm. We went up on the roof. There was somebody had gotten a little pad, you know, like you'd have at a driving range.
Right.
And we would just chip golf balls across LaSalle. Work on our short game.
Yes, okay, so looking at this. So Benjamin Franklin Woosley's father was Hezekiah K. Woosley.
Okay.
I don't know if the K was Kevin.
I don't know.
Kenneth.
I don't know that there were a lot of crazy K names that were a big deal in the 1800s,
well,
were there?
Right. Nothing came to mind immediately when I saw the K. But his children were Benjamin Franklin, the oldest.
Yeah.
Then Rebecca, then Hezekiah. Another Hezekiah. Yeah, his Hezekiah. That's interesting. So his third child, he then named after himself.
Yeah.
Then Malinda, Malinda.
Okay.
And then Thomas. So nobody then at that point was named William.
No.
You know, even if like the possibility that you suggest somebody in there should be named William then, right?
Well, unless
brothers.
Hezekiah had siblings, one of whom had the first son of that generation.
But there's none of then Hezekiah's siblings are named William.
So that would also William. Break it there, yeah.
Here are some of the names. So Hezekiah's father was Benjamin again. So Benjamin was much more common for a series of generations. You have Shadrach.
We had a lot of biblical names going on, didn't we?
Oh, wait, there is a William. Wait a second. So there was a William there.
But not the oldest.
Not the oldest, just the second. The Nancy, which I don't think of Nancy as much a name from the beginning of the 19th century.
No.
And then another Hezekiah. Hezekiah. Then Mahala.
Mahala.
M-A-H-A-L-A.
That's a boy's name or a girl's name?
That's a girl's name.
Okay.
And then Elijah.
Okay. Strong in the biblical names. Really strong.
I'm guessing I'm pronouncing this correctly. I don't. Pacient? P-A-C-I-E-N-T?
I don't know.
Or patient? I mean, but that's not how
it's not how you spell patient, but it's possible. It could be that our family was just way ahead of that whole game where you give your children unusual names and spell them wrong.
But we've talked about this. What is something that racist or intolerant... Somebody just dropped something down the stairs in my house. I need to make sure it wasn't a human. What is something that kind of racist or bigoted Caucasians have often said about African-American people.
Oh, they make fun of their names.
Yeah, they make up these alphabet soup names mm-hmm. and other such
right.
horse malarkey like that.
Like pacing.
But you walk through a cemetery.
Sure.
With graves from the 1800s, you are going to see some of the most uncommon names that you can imagine seeing.
I remember I was in a cemetery. Right. Remember when back in Massachusetts, I was going to a church that was like 400 years old, and I mean, one of the oldest churches in the Massachusetts Bay Colony, and I remember there was a headstone where their children were named Lexus and Mercedes,
and I was no, they were not.
Really surprised by that.
An Infiniti?
In the 1740s.
Audi. My baby Audi.
Audi. It appears that in Middle English, P-A-C-I-E-N-T is an acceptable alternate spelling of patient.
Well, that's why we don't speak Middle English anymore.
No.
Middle English often just seems like bad misspellings.
Yes.
Right?
Like they hadn't, they hadn't pinned something down yet.
Right.
Middle English, so, maybe you should call, like not yet finished English.
Which you'd think had been around for a while.
Yeah.
The English language. Mm-hmm. 1,000 years or more by that point, even still. Right? You'd think they'd have settled on some things by then, right?
The language is still doing a lot of developing today. So
it is still pretty much the Wild West. English language.
I mean, I found one of on the first page of searches for patient, I found something that says the website, the summary is, I don't think patient is a word. So that was good.
So patient. So
or here's another option. It turns out that in Czech, the spelling P-A-C-I-E-N-T is a noun for a patient. It is a noun that means someone who is a patient. Like in a hospital. So maybe that's
That's great for the Czech, but I don't know that that fits in here, right? I mean, do you think that's what they were thinking of?
I do not. As is often the case with family, I do not know what they were thinking.
And our family, so going back there to Hezekiah, and then preceding from there, our family spent a good almost 200 years in Virginia.
Oh, wow.
And see, we had always been told our family came like from Kentucky or...
Well, I knew that...
That sort of...
I remember that there was family in Virginia or West Virginia, so... I believe.
Well, that's true. Okay, so some of this Virginia may actually be... not. Why did I say Kentucky? Because I was thinking West Virginia. Okay. So that's true. That could still fit with that.
Way to alienate our entire West Virginia audience.
Hey, I've been to West Virginia. Have you been to West Virginia?
I don't think I have.
Okay, then. I've been to Charleston, West Virginia. It was a fun town.
Nice.
So there.
I've been to Memphis.
That's nothing to do.
Sorry. Apropos of nothing. So go ahead. Good luck. Get it back on track.
Where else have you been? Now, are you interested in hearing a few more names?
Sure. The more I think about this, there are so many biblical names in that household that you were reading. Like, all of the boys had biblical names. And then of course Nancy, which is a biblical name.
What is you usually remember this one, the line from
from Raising Arizona, where they talk about you gotta give him a good biblical name, like Jason. And then the hilarious part is it turns out that there is a Jason who appears one time, like one verse in the Bible. but I don't think they intended it that way.
Still a solid name.
But that's what I was going for.
Are you playing right along that stream?
That was my homage to the Coen brothers. Biblical name like Nancy. So I think the patient was an attempt to do a biblical name.
Yeah.
Or a virtuous name.
So William Benjamin Woosley's parents were, of course, as we've determined, Benjamin Franklin.
Yeah.
And his mother, Farabee.
Farabee.
F-E-R-E-B-Y.
F-E-R. Wow.
Farabee.
That's a made-up name right there.
So William Benjamin Woosley married Letha Mabel Barnes.
Okay.
Letha's parents were named Amy Harriet Q.
Uh-huh.
That's nice enough. And Lingner Wolfeston Barnes.
Lingner Wolfeston.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to say right now, I feel cheated. If somebody had told me that the names Lingner and Wolfeston were in our family tree, I would have made very different choices about what I named my boys.
Wolfeston.
Come here, Wolfeston. That'd have been great.
And then, so Lingner Barnes' parents were named Mahlon, M-A-H-L-O-N.
Okay.
Wolferton.
Wait, Wolferton, as opposed to the other one, was it Wolfeston?
Yeah, now so that opens up the possibility that there's simply a transcription error here. Yeah.
Or they were just trying to get all of the variants of Wolf that they could.
Well, because R, S. So the next one would have been Wolferton.
Uh-huh.
No, maybe not.
Great. No, I like it. I like Wolferton.
So Amy Q's parents were Caroline Dorcas Sims. Dorcas, another good biblical name,
yep.
Right? And Salathel.
Q, Salathel.
Salathel. S-A-L-A-T-H-E-L.
S-A-L-A-T-H-E-L. These are not names. Although, again, a quick search, you find lots of people in the 1800s. Apparently, Salathel was a hot name in the 1800s.
How about Mahlon?
It was, I haven't looked up Mahlon, although I believe I've heard that before. So it appears that Salathel was like the Dylan of the 1800s.
What?
Mahlon.
This sounds like somebody with like a regional accent.
Oh, another biblical name. Actually, I thought I knew Mahlon? That name from somewhere. Two of the brothers mentioned in the book of Ruth. Sons of Elimelech.
That's digging deep, though, to get Mahlon.
Sure is. And it's a missed opportunity because Mahlon or Malin's brother was named Chilion.
Chilion.
So Chilion is a great name that should be used in American households much more often.
All right, so having some Greek language background,
yeah.
Would that be Malin or Mahlon, you think?
This is Hebrew.
Or Hebrew. Jeez,
it's all right.
I meant to say Hebrew.
It's all right.
I am saying everything wrong. Hebrew, Kentucky.
I think it would be Malin. Malin. Yeah, I think that would be it. But I'm not
gonna
sure.
I'm going to guess that Lingner is not a biblical name.
Kidding. I'm going to go with you on that. Oh, here. Wait. Somebody wants to know how do you pronounce Malin. I mean, everybody wants to know.
Because they're thinking of using it.
Nobody's clear. Wow, that didn't help me at all. The pronunciation as it's written here, that's nonsense. That doesn't make any sense. It does also help us, though, again. So Malin, these biblical names had meanings often. Malin was the word for sickly. So... again, wrong choice. You picked the wrong brother.
Sickly?
Mm-hmm.
Why would you name your child Sickly?
And really, so what I pronounce Chilean, you could probably pronounce Killian. It probably is better as like a K. So Killian is actually pretty close to a, you know, a contemporary name. But you know, why? Mm-hmm. Mistake. That's all I'm saying.
So, there are some other interesting names. I don't have to go. There is a Martin going back in our family to the 1700s, so my son will be pleased to hear that.
Yes.
There's a Zachariah. Okay. Zachariah Drake Keefe. Nice. So that's still somebody with only one first name.
Drake Keefe.
Zachariah was married to Jerusha.
Yes.
So that was another biblical name going back. There was an Elias Barnes who was married to Keziah Pulliam.
Man, K-E-Z-I-A-H. Strong. Even the ones that weren't apparently biblical names sounded like they were biblical.
Yeah, we got, there's a Zachariah, another Zachariah, another Keziah. So then the previous generation, well, Keziah was named after her mother, which I think was more common in the past. You don't see it as often now, right. Girls named after their mother, but it seems to have been more common in previous
I think you're right.
Generations.
By the way, the name Killian means man of finality, so that might not be any better. Maybe we just stay away from that family altogether.
There's a Harman, H-A-R-M-A-N, Harman.
All right.
Who lived in Goochland, Virginia, by the way.
Great.
Goochland.
Goochland, Virginia. Boy, you know, what are the chances that at some point we could move our mailing address to Goochland, Virginia?
Well, maybe we'll look into that. We will have to talk about where...
Oh, no, are we having to move it again?
We are. I don't know that we're ready to get into that right now, but
no.
We'll cover that closer to the end. But, yeah. Yeah. We have a Phineas. That's nice. Yep. Jennings. That's very... yeah. So it's... There's some good stuff going back.
Absolutely. Well, that's cool. I'm glad that you looked that stuff up. That's interesting. So, boy, that's funny though. That it's always been said to us is this long, long string, and it's three generations.
We do have something else we've been told, and I always thought this was just some attempt to try and gain some sort of identity, but it does seem that we have been in this particular principality for quite some time.
The United
there
States.
Are, right. People represented on their birth certificate having been born in Virginia, British colony, for instance. So.
Wow.
But I don't know. See, does that make you feel like any sense? Like, see, I've been in America since the very beginning. I don't know that makes...
I think right. What it tells me is that you can be someone who's been in America from the very beginning and still be exceedingly not impressive.
Still not know.
We are not.
Oh, this was.
We're not one of the
what was actually supposed to happen here. Oh, this was supposed to work.
We are not one of the elite families of American history. We've just been here for a long time.
Just by default, we've refused to leave.
We've refused to leave or go out of existence.
That's sad.
There you go. Sad that we haven't gone out of existence.
Maybe, I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't say it that way. I mean, I should be glad we're here, right?
Yeah, regrets, right?
Regrets. No regrets.
Regrets.
So, yeah. So you were saying, if you had known that Wingner was available, you would have maybe perhaps, or Wolfiston, named one of your children that.
Oh, I'm pretty sure my wife wouldn't have allowed any such thing, but I would have wanted to entertain it, that's for sure.
Do you have any regrets about... Okay, this is not a question I can ask. I can't ask if you have any regrets about the choices you made to name, what to name your children. That's horrible. And I don't have any regrets for that, and I'm sure you don't. You
picked fine names actually, for your we children. Sort of do. There is sort of a, there is a thing that we talk about a lot, which is that we did not realize the degree to which official records and places that depend on official records lean on your first name. And so if you go by your middle name, mm-hmm. you are routinely inconvenienced, or the people you're having to interact with are confused because you go to doctor's offices and they think Josh is William Woosley. The pharmacy, to this, he's 19, and they identify him as William Woosley.
Well, see, that's interesting, because a lot of places now, I feel like, give you an option of indicating, particularly like a doctor's office or something. Mm-hmm. I know when I interact with my doctor's office,
yeah.
they, or, you know, with a new doctor through the doctor's group that I frequent,
sure.
they've asked me what name I prefer to go by.
Mm-hmm. No, but I'm saying, what I mean is, like, in terms of the, that's true. Like, his doctor calls him Josh. But I mean, but, like, when the medical record shows up, it shows up as Woosley, William.
Ah. See, we always use that with Dad when there'd be a call and someone would ask for William. We exactly. knew it was somebody who didn't know him.
That's right.
It was a way to weed people out.
Yes.
Of course, maybe we should have been weeding out the people that did know him.
Possible. It's possible. We should have, whenever somebody called for William, we should have said, there's a chance for a fresh start. Yeah. Yeah, we're going to go get him right now. I'm hoping you're cool.
I'm sure that he had many nice friends.
I'm sure he had nice friends. And if any of them want to come on the podcast and testify to their niceness, they're welcome to. I'm looking at you, Brosh Brothers. That was a deep pull, wasn't it?
It was, yes, with that the portrait of Dad.
Yes.
So they have that hanging in the basement now.
Right.
Okay. Molly went down into her parents' basement at one point.
Was she spooked?
She was spooked. She came burning back up the stairs. There's a painting of a really creepy-looking person down there. I said, that's your grandfather.
That's correct.
What?
And she's correct. Things looked weird in the 70s. There's no way around it.
No, it's actually a very nicely executed painting.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a little jealous. No one's ever made a painting of me.
But it's unusual tones. And it's, right. And it's, yeah, and stylistically, it's very intense.
Right, he has a very intense look on his face. It's almost angular without seeming unnaturally angular. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Got some very, and the background is a little bit more. I'm not thinking of the right words to describe it, but it's the background creates a whole another vibe. Yeah. It's not like pastoral or anything in the background, or it's not a neutral background.
And isn't the whole thing in kind of a yellowish brown?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's all yellows, browns, mm-hmm. some blacks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
Yeah. No, you're right. I've never had a portrait done of me. Well, no, it didn't. They took my picture for the wall of pastors at the last church I was at. I'm not sure that the... I think, like Donald Trump, the person who followed me refused to hang it up. So. But I think
you've
got taken.
Broken a cardinal rule here, Brendan.
We're just going to go with it.
What's your opinion on having regrets? Well, I hear, you know, I think it's very common to hear people say, no regrets, or, if I had that to change, I wouldn't, or,
Yeah.
Some variation on that theme.
Well, you and I were talking about this a little bit recently. There, you were, who was it on the? It was on the Last Sky Dance, Pippen. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Pip. Talk about that. Was that? It was Pippen.
Right. So Scottie Pippen said, in reference to there was a time, and I believe this was in that 1 year of the playoffs where Michael Jordan was not on the team.
Right.
And there was, it was a final play of a game. They're drawing up a final play of the game out, coming out of a timeout. And they were going to have the play go to Tony Kukoc.
Yes.
The waiter, who had a distinguished career in Europe as a real finisher.
Right.
And had done so actually quite successfully in that season for the Bulls.
Right.
And Pippen apparently didn't like that and refused to go into the game.
Yeah.
And so they ran the play. They ran the play without him, and Kukoc made the final shot, and they won the playoff game.
Yeah. And so then that was the thing that carried. That has gone with Pippen. That has been one of the pieces of his reputation ever since.
Oh, quite justifiably so. Don't you think?
Oh yeah. No. Yeah. But I'm saying so. But just to set up that was like it, right. It's not like it just and then everyone forgot about it and moved on. No, everyone remembered it.
So then he said during the Last Dance that it was a mistake. He shouldn't have done it, right?
Right.
But then if he had it to do all over again, he'd probably do the same thing.
Right. He said I probably wouldn't change anything. Because like, I listened to it, and I thought, wait a minute, did he say what I think he said? Yeah. Yeah, so
he shouldn't have stuck my fork in the light socket. But you know what?
But I'd do it again. That's what came across. And, yeah, that was pretty weird. And so you and I had started to have a little conversation before, thinking about that idea, like, of regret. And there's Scotty, I think, kind of, I don't think he's doing it intentionally, but there's a sense in which he's staking out a philosophical position that you can say something was good or bad, right or wrong, a mistake or a vindicated choice. You could say, you know, looking back, I made the wrong choice. But it's like he's determined to say, but I'm not going to regret it. I can acknowledge it was the wrong choice and a choice that I'm not going to bother regretting.
Right. I think there's a couple things. I think there's a thought process and verbal shorthand that takes place now that is a result of sort of a cultural idea that it's a bad thing to have regrets or to second guess yourself.
Right.
I think as a very individualized culture, if you second guess yourself, there is no one else to put that responsibility on.
Right.
You know, and you can't second guess yourself.
No.
Because you are the be all end all. And I have a real problem with that thought process. Yeah. I don't understand when someone says, I wouldn't change anything if I had it to do all over again. Because there are a lot of things I would change if I had it to do all over again.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if what you're saying is you'd be afraid of altering the trajectory of your life by changing something. I don't know that we're getting that metaphysical with it, you know?
I think it actually gets somewhere kind of close to that. Like, it's a thing you hear a lot, I think, in sports settings, too, where players will do something that failed. And sometimes it was even a questionable decision. And you will hear players say that they wouldn't change a thing. They would do it the same way again. You'll hear that a lot. My favorite is when pitchers are just getting whacked around the park, and they after the game they're like, "No, I had my best stuff I've had all year. I was throwing great."
You're like, I love that.
But like the 8 runs, that's a problem. So I think some of it is like there is kind of a machismo, kind of a bravery or arrogance, like that can't bear the thought of saying, well, maybe it could be better. If you think about it, that's part of what it comes down to. What it really comes down to is not just that, because no one ever says, like if someone did say, yeah, if I had a chance to do it again, I would do it differently. They're never saying, because I'm hoping things would go even worse.
Right.
They're always saying, I mean, the clear implication there is, if I had done it differently, it might be better. Mm-hmm. And I think there are people that can't handle admitting, oh, it could be better. So that's what they would say. And I wouldn't change a thing. I'd keep it all the way it is.
See, and I don't come from this as an educational background personally, but this is an educational, there's an educational model that I've embraced. My children have gone to a Montessori school
mm-hmm.
from preschool through now
yeah.
into middle school. And a primary tenet of Montessori education is that failure is one of the most important parts of learning.
Right.
That you fail at something, it teaches you, you then make different choices. You learn something from that failure.
Yes.
And to me then, if you take that from the educational process and you look at that then as a person, when I have made bad decisions or poor choices, or, you know, had, you know, mindsets that were unproductive for me for a period of time, I have learned from that now. I have understood something that came from the, you know, the outcome of that taught me something.
Right.
But if you could say to me, if I could say, I wouldn't need to, fail to get to that outcome if I would just have known the right thing in the first place. Of course I would do the right thing.
Right.
Right? I mean, that's the principle about, you know, if I had it to do again, I would do it differently.
Yeah.
Because that would mean, because I've learned something that I could use. It's not the idea even, I mean, because we're not redoing anything. I guess we are. Let's say we learn something about ourselves and how we behave in relationships or in the workplace. And we lose a job or we lose a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully we're going to have another job or another relationship again. Shouldn't we be taking something that we learned into that, right?
Right.
In a sense, we do have it to do all over again.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's an interesting way to look at it.
I just feel like if we don't... I recognize the value of failure.
Right.
But if I never had to fail, well, then why would I want to have the failure? Because failure does not guarantee that you will learn something either.
Correct. Correct. And sometimes failures mean, they do take us to paths or to outcomes that are really troubling or really... that then change the trajectory from there,
mm-hmm.
right?
For us and for others, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, I mean, like, to me, the idea is, I don't know so much, I guess this is where I find, I think so much about Pippin's answer there, because I would say, if I were him there, I would be saying, I wish I had done it differently.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But I learned something from it happening this way.
Right.
You know? Right. I don't know. I get what you're saying. I think to me, part of the reason that I don't think regret is as valuable or as useful is that it doesn't inherently lead to change.
True.
Right? So mm-hmm. just because I regret how something went doesn't mean I'm going to do it differently or doesn't, you know, the next chance that I have or I'm going to change my thinking or anything like that. I may just, you know, be sad about, you know, that things didn't go my way. But, like, for me, I wouldn't spend as much time thinking, like, regretting... like the individual decisions, right? Mm-hmm. If I think about the past, if you were to say to me, do I have regrets? I think most of the regrets I have are places where some action or some decision or some choice that I made meant the end of something that was positive or good.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like a friendship that ends, right? And you look back and you can say, okay, well, I made this decision. The decision may have been right. The decision may have been wrong. For me, the regret would lie in the lost friendship.
Mm-hmm. Right. Regret. So, well, yeah. And to me, the value of regret isn't in an opportunity to, engage in self-abuse.
Right.
It's to spur on the opportunity to recognize something that can be done differently in the future.
Sure.
How to engage the future better, not how to re-engage the past, because re-engaging the past beyond the point of understanding what the mistakes were has no value, because you cannot change the past. Right? I mean,
right.
Have you figured out a way to change the past?
Actually,
if you have, I'd love that. I would also like to time travel. If there was one thing, if I got like a wish from a genie,
yeah,
time travel.
Mm. Rookie mistake. You get a wish from a genie, 3 wishes. That's what you want.
I think most genies have kind of figured that out, and they're like, you can't wish for more wishes.
Not if it's a dum-dum that offered you one wish with no strings attached.
Do you trust a dum-dum genie to give you really deliver on what you're asking for?
Well, it's worked for me so far.
Wait a second.
So
I have a lot of regrets in life. My mental health issues, the depression and the anxiety that I have led to what I've come to identify a pattern going back to my youth of having opportunities, pursuing something, working towards something, a goal, something, a dream, and being on the cusp of that, I sabotage myself because I have significant self-worth issues. I hate myself, and I get to that point and I say, I don't deserve this. What's going to happen if I get this? I'll just screw up the thing that I always wanted.
Right.
I look back on that and I have regrets about missed opportunities.
Sure.
I can see things and say, it probably would be a different trajectory I'd be on. Those regrets aren't things that I don't dwell on those individual things any longer.
Right.
The regret is kind of just an acknowledged, benign thing. I've made bad choices. I understand that about myself. And I now have some understanding of why I've made these bad choices. And I'm hoping to learn from that so that I do not continue to make those bad choices.
Yeah.
So
But I think there's like some regret.
If I just dwelled on that stuff, if I picked out one of those opportunities and just thought about it all the time and thought about where my life would be different because of that and focused on my life should be like this instead of like this, that would be a really, really bad regret. A bad way to engage my regret.
Right.
See, I think regret and then the behavior that comes from that are two different things.
Yes. And I think that if regret just sort of paralyzes you or gets you stuck in the past, it doesn't have value at that point. I think the challenging thing is that sometimes people, again, maybe part of what they associate is, if I say I regret something in the past that would have meant, this outcome would be different, am I saying that I don't value this outcome? Right? So the person who says, oh, I wish I had asked that, I don't know. This is just a scenario in my head that just unfolded.
Right. I sabotaged this relationship. I should have married this girl.
Right. That's not a conversation you want to have in front of the wife and kids.
I should communicate that regret to my wife.
Yeah.
But again, you look at that and you can say, all right, my life could have been different. But I do not need to dwell on what that would look like. What I need to do is say, if I find myself in this situation, or I have, this is where I'm at now.
Right.
I value where I am now. I'm not going to relitigate the past in the sense that there's anything I can do about it. But I'm going to make then, if there's something I can learn from that to apply to my life now, I will do so.
Yeah. That's good. That's a good way to put it. That to not relitigate the past, but learn from it. And let regret be the cue to where some of those learning opportunities are, right? Because if somebody says they live with no regret, that also means, that suggests that they're looking at everything behind them and saying, it was great. I couldn't learn anything from that.
Right. So yeah, there's a lack of humility, I think, to having no regrets.
Yes.
And I think there's a value, you know, so failure, which would often be a thing that we could regret.
Mm-hmm.
Failure teaches us something, both like, you know, in the scientific method, a failure in an experiment,
right.
That data helps to hopefully lend some insight into a different direction to go.
Correct.
Something, the next thing to try. But it also, failure provides humility.
Right.
That understanding that my first choice or my choices are not always infallible. I'm not infallible in my thought process. Right. If I have a gut instinct and I am just proceeding just based upon that initial thought I'm having on everything or on second guessing myself too much or whatever, but there's a value to being able to examine how we think and how we make decisions.
Yeah, I agree. That's
And knowing that you can fail is important, because if you find yourself in a work situation, a lot of people are going to be in situations, parenting is one of those examples,
mm-hmm.
where you're going to make decisions that affect other people. And if you have no humility in your thought process, the likelihood is you're not going to be putting enough into looking at the full scope of what your decision can do for everyone that it involves.
Right. No, I totally agree. Hey, I want to have us take a break for a moment, and then we'll come back and see if we have any more we want to add to this and go from there, okay?
Sure, yeah.
All right.
I took too much bacon at breakfast at the cousin's house, and they had special bacon rules, and I took too much, and then I didn't eat it, and then it felt really bad, because they have these very special bacon rules, and I broke them, and then I didn't even eat the bacon I took.
So what you just heard there is Kevin's daughter, Molly, and with having this conversation, Kevin asked her, do you have anything that you regret? And that was the answer she gave. And I thought that was really interesting, Kevin, because even then it made me think about how, again, that those situations where we might identify regret, there's an opportunity. And the opportunity is either to get stuck on it, right, to relitigate it, like you said before, or to learn from it. And I like the way you said that before. And I think that's what I want to take away from this conversation, actually,
mm-hmm.
is that that it's okay to regret something, because things didn't go exactly right. Nothing ever goes exactly right. And but at the same time, rather than getting hung up on it and relitigating it, you can learn from it and then go forward. So thanks. That's a good way to think about that. So
thank you for the conversation.
So should we I think we're probably coming near the end of our time, right?
Yeah.
So let's encourage people, as always. They can find us on Sons of the Double Cheeseburger on Facebook, and some people are, and chatting about things occasionally. So that's always fun.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah. Or if you're not an internet type, you know, and you prefer to use the mail, what I believe it's the kids that call it the snail mail, Kevin?
They do.
Is it
the snails, probably.
And snails, also referred to as snail mail, right.
Let's support the USPS, though.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
These times. So I want
the president does not support the USPS. Let's do it for him. Sorry, I got political for a minute there. My apologies.
It does appear that we are having to leave Alabama.
Oh.
I've forgotten where we were.
Flomaton, right.
Right. They did not kick us out. We determined that the history there was a bit too problematic for us.
Yeah.
Some of the more prominent citizenry have some unusual ideas and thought processes. So
yeah,
we've made that choice. We're going to try and get a bit away geographically.
Yeah,
as well as intellectually.
Well,
from some of that.
Yeah, is it Kevin? Is it fair to say that maybe at this point that some of these post offices are looking at us as a high risk client? Is word
because
getting
we keep
around
leaving?
That we move a lot?
I think that's possible,
okay.
If they're even aware we're there.
But
I still think we offer something.
Sure we do.
I mean, I don't think we've lacked for opportunity.
No. I think we offer, I mean, some prestige.
Sure,
to a town somewhere, right? Not unlike like when the Amazon headquarters thing was going on, right? It's going to add some prestige to a town like that.
Amazon 2.
Amazon
but
2.
This is now
Electric Boogaloo.
S-O... S-O-T-D-C...
Yes.
1. Right?
That's correct.
International Headquarters. We have selected... I had spent a little bit of time on a vision quest or something in New Mexico at one point a few years ago, seeking out our maternal grandfather, whose name Chesley, also a name. Do you have any regrets about not naming any of your children Chesley?
No.
Okay. And I spent some time in Silver City, New Mexico. Now, Silver City, I didn't feel like offered us the best opportunities. And we're also kind of looking to, elevate, create some economic and prestige opportunity for some smaller communities.
That's what I'm saying.
Would you agree with that, Brennan?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we had some really nice conversations with the folks in Elephant Butte, New Mexico.
Yeah.
So
good people in Elephant
Butte. You can reach us at Sons of the Double Cheeseburger, P.O. Box. Which one do you think it is?
7.
Oh. 6. So close.
Man.
So that's P.O. Box 6. The zip code is 87935. Son to the Double Cheeseburger. P.O. Box 6. Elephant Butte, New Mexico. 87935. If you were interested in Elephant Butte, there are some things to commend that community. Is adjacent to Cibola National Forest.
Nice.
And the Apache Kid Wilderness.
That's cool.
It's named after a nearby butte that is said to be...
That is sensitive about its weight?
Shaped like an elephant.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
Right.
Makes sense. By the way, did you get P.O. Box 6 as a tribute to... Al Kaline, who wore uniform number 6?
We did now, yeah.
Yeah! Very sensitive.
So, I think it really looks like Apache Kid Wilderness is a really nice place to visit. Cibola National Forest, Cibola meaning buffalo.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that.
Spanish. Yes. Although that's one of my pet peeves, not using the Spanish word for buffalo, but people calling the largest land mammal in North America, calling that a buffalo.
This is not.
It's the American bison.
Sure is.
show it some respect.
Yeah.
Call it the American bison.
Represent for the bison.
It is one of my favorite animals.
Mm-hmm.
I am a huge fan. There are several places in this area where I can go to see bison at any time. So I feel fortunate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But yeah, there's plenty to see in Cibola National Forest. And there's lots of recreation opportunities. So you could really make kind of a whole trip out of it.
Yeah. Make it a weekend.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe long and, weekend even.
There's significant ties to Native Americans who were resident in the area.
Mm-hmm.
They used the Cibola Wilderness, or that area was where they kind of made a last stand of sorts. So there's a certain sad history to that, because
yeah.
I don't feel like... I think it would have been... If we have regrets as a country, it might have been better if we had not made the Native Americans take a last stand anywhere. If we had perhaps just coexisted with them.
Right.
But that seems to be an area where we have not used our regret to learn anything yet.
No, we have not. Not yet. But there is still time, because the American experiment has not finished grinding to a halt.
Finished. True. So, yeah, Elephant Butte, New Mexico.
That's right.
And we have not yet unearthed any sort of other troublesome behavior.
Mm.
Right?
Well, an Elephant Butte's not a very old town. It's only been around since, like, 1998.
As a,
When it incorporated as a city. And so they haven't had as much time to build a bad history.
I am nervous that that is because it was some sort of white supremacist compound or sectarian Mormon colony or something.
Well, we're gonna cross our fingers, but
it's possible
we're gonna have to move again sometime.
Brandon.
Yeah.
Are you, by any chance, familiar with the Toy Box Killer?
Oh, boy. I've heard of him.
David Parker Ray?
Yeah.
Not Ray Parker Jr.
Oh. No.
What was his big hit?
Ghostbusters.
Oh, my. Oh, well, that's... So, unfortunately, there was a gentleman, David Parker Ray.
When people go by all three names, it's often a bad sign.
He lived in Elephant Butte, New Mexico. This is what I'm reading here right now.
Mm-hmm.
He was an American. You know, when you're looking on Wikipedia and you see like somebody, he was an American industrialist or an American sportsman.
Mm-hmm.
He was an American kidnapper, torturer, rapist, and serial killer.
It's not good.
That's
the worst job description I've ever seen on...
Although no bodies were found, he was accused by his accomplices of killing several people and suspected by the police to have murdered as many as 60 women from Arizona and New Mexico.
Wow.
His daughter. Oh, his daughter was an accomplice.
Oh.
He soundproofed a trailer truck that he called his quote-unquote toy box. And equipped it with items used for sexual torture.
Well,
he was never convicted of murder because he died of a heart attack.
We may.
He was right. He was convicted of the kidnapping and torture, etc., etc. We may need to.
Yeah, we've already paid for the box for this month, but.
Yeah, and I don't think that we want to necessarily paint a whole community in a negative way. Just because there was someone who lived there who liked to give people in an iron slave collar and such. But
I think what we might need to do is we might need to have a Zoom meeting with Mayor Edna Traeger.
Yeah, yeah.
And just, get our heads together on about this.
I've located a list of serial killers in the United States. I may want to look into that before we decide to move anywhere else.
That's a good idea.
Is there a list of racists? Because that was our problem.
It's, listen, if we can't live, if we can't put this P.O. box in any town that has either had racists or, like, vile human beings, we're not going to have a P.O. box, right?
No, that's true. Yeah, you are entirely correct.
Or it's going to be in, like, Fantasyland or...
P.O. box, raft in the middle of the ocean, with nobody ever on it.
Yeah. Maybe just have all the mail sent to some satellite that's been orbiting the Earth by itself, with no one to mistreat.
It's probably a bigot, too.
It is.
Those satellites are watching us do things.
They are.
They're perverts.
Okay, well, then I guess, when you put it that way, not a satellite.
All right, well, anyway, for the time being.
For the time being, it's going to stay Elephant Butte. All right. Well, Kevin, good to talk to you.
Likewise, good friend.
I don't regret this at all. You see what I did there?
I do.
I ruined the end of the podcast.
No, that was a timely reference.
That's what I did.
Yeah. No, I you know, no regrets. So let's let's be proud of this moment and
I'm hoping everyone wait, is it are you referencing the tattoo that has made its way around the internet from time to time?
I am.
Okay, because I think there's one that says no regrets, and there's another one that says no regrets.
Oh. I don't have either of those.
So, I don't either, thankfully. All right. Well, until next time, I have no regrets, no regrets, no regrets.
That's right.
None of
those.
So
keep washing your hands.
Yes.
Wear your masks. Reach for the stars.
And is it that hard to wear a mask? Just wear a mask.
Don't masks make you look jaunty?
They make you look more mysterious.
I guess they make you look more mysterious when you have it over your eyes. That looks kind of fun.
No, then they make you more confused.
You look
But you look mysterious. Because up until now, in modern American culture, if somebody comes walking in a mask, they're about to hold up whatever establishment you're in. So you can walk around feeling that kind of sly, right?
You know, there hasn't been an uptick in bank robberies or anything, has there?
That's weird, isn't it? I think it's because only six, like, you keep people farther apart, and it makes it easier to pick out the bank robbers.
Do you think that a bank robber is worrying about how far he or she stands apart from someone as they enter the bank that they're about to rob?
Well, no, but then they draw attention to them. I mean, I don't think normally they do, unless they're, like, really cautious. But
I mean, you come into the bank, and you're coming in, you're like, boom, bank robbery,
that's what
bros,
I'm saying, yeah.
Let's do this. Or I guess you're standing in line, and you're waiting to hand a note saying, don't press the little button, don't put any, explosive packets in with the money and give me all the money, because
this is happening, right.
I don't know. Right. This is happening.
This is happening. That's what you say.
Me think.
You walk into a situation like that and you say, this is happening.
Oh, this is happening. We're doing this.
So.
There's.
As happens from time to time, we have worked ourselves into a conversational whirlpool.
And you want to then put on the note, do you have any balloons? Put any balloons you have in the bag.
Yes.
Do you have any balloons that make funny shapes?
Ah, not unless round is funny.
Maybe we should have put our P.O. box in Arizona, since we've done a number of Raising Arizona.
Oh, boy, it's so close, too. I mean, literally, Elephant Butte's not even that far from Minnesota.
You know, in the grand scheme.
Fairly, yeah.
We were talking about this earlier tonight in the car, and my daughter, she who shall not be named, referred to you as essentially a neighbor.
Ah.
And I said, he lives in California, how is he essentially a neighbor? She's like, well, like, if you look at the whole universe, like, compared to, like, how far away Pluto is, California is basically right next door. If you're looking at it from all the way out there.
Well, yeah.
And I could not disagree with that.
No. So it appears that, the first towns you might arrive at in Arizona, if you were coming, would be Franklin or Duncan.
Franklin or Duncan. Sounds like a couple of our ancestors.
Sure does.
And on that note, I think we've wrapped this up.
Yes.
Put a little bow on it.
All right. Until next time, Kevin. Keep safe. Good to talk to you.
Love you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.